This film is dedicated to the people of Wichita and to the three generations of law enforcement officers who worked relentlessly to solve this case. A title, The Hunt for the BTK Killer. Now outside a courthouse, words appear. Sedgwick County, Kansas, 27 June 2005. You are listening to video description on the SAP channel. This service is primarily intended for viewers who are blind or visually impaired. To return to regular program audio, turn off the SAP feature on your TV or VCR.
Excuse me, Detective Nikita. Just a few words.
I got nothing to say. Nothing's going to bring those innocent people back. At least you won't hurt anybody else.
This film has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding by CBS. Described by Dutch Priest, Mathea Warren Lane, Carrie Canning, Stacey Perlman, and Justin Soule. Read by Lynn McLean. Now a baldy man with glasses and a goatee enters a courtroom.
He was a father. He was a husband. He was a community leader.
The man sits at microphones.
But underneath it all, he was a monster. He called himself BTK. In a letter he wrote to the Wichita Eagle in 1974, he said the letters stood for bind them, torture them, kill them.
Titles, Robert Forster, Michael Michelle, Maury Chaykin, Mimi Kuzik, and Greg Henry. Donna Goodhand, Michael Filipovich, Daniel Cash. Music by Tree Adams, edited by Mark Stevens.
He brutally murdered 10 people. Terrorized our whole community. And some thought we'd never catch him.
All rise.
Production designer Dan Yarhi. Director of photography Bobby Bukowski. Co-producer Peter Sadowski. Produced by Randy Sutter, Richard Fischoff. Executive producers Diana Kiru, Judith Furno. Teleplay by Tom Teller and Donald Martin.
Would the defense please rise?
As the goateed man faces the judge, Detective Magida listens from the back of the gallery.
At this time, comes on before the court. Case captioned State of Kansas Plaintiff versus Dennis L. Rader, defendant. Case number is 2005 CR498. This matter comes on for trial. Is the state ready?
The state's ready to proceed, Your Honor.
Is the defense ready?
Your Honor, at this time, Mr. Rader would waive his right to a jury trial and enter a plea of guilty on all 10 counts.
More titles, based in part on the book Nightmare in Wichita, The Hunt for the BTK Killer by Robert Beatty. Words appear 1 year earlier. At a bathroom mirror, Dennis, without the goatee, carefully combs his thinning hair and trims his mustache. He frowns at his aging square face and squints. Next, he swirls some mouthwash in his cheeks. Now, he checks his teeth in a grin that nearly squeezes his eye shut, then puts on wire-rimmed glasses. Standing in a khaki civil servant uniform, he peers hard at his reflection. Directed by Stephen Kay. Dennis puts on a jacket with a badge on the front and enters a living room where a matronly woman sips coffee as she watches TV. She stands, smiles at him, and fusses with his tie.
Highway 54 is moving well until you get to construction. You're used to that, Wichita.
Yeah, you look very handsome.
Gain some badge yourself. There's still much more ahead. I'll call you later.
As Dennis leaves, his wife watches TV.
30 years since the first BTK killings. Author Robert Beatty has written a book about the serial killer, and he's here to talk to our own Kelly Zerwick later this morning. Stay with us, Wichita.
Coming up later in the show, author Robert Beatty.
A still shot shows a big, middle-aged man with glasses. Now Dennis drives a white van.
Over 20 years had passed without a communication, without a murder. All those years and still no new leads, no suspects.
Paint chips on a house's roofline.
BTK had become the most infamous cold case of its time.
A blonde child gazes out of a window.
We tried to move on and put the darkness behind us. What we didn't know was that the fear we all felt those 30 years ago was about to start all over again.
Now Dennis pours coffee from a thermos. His badge reads, Park City Compliance Officer. He sips from the thermos cup, then takes a Bismarck pastry from a paper bag. As he chews the jelly-filled donut, Dennis spots a black and white dog sitting unattended on a sidewalk. Dennis shakes his hands out the window, brushing sugar off his fingers.
You are in violation. Park City Code 7-3.
Dennis takes a clipboard from a plastic file holder on the passenger seat. He clicks a ballpoint and jots on a form. Putting the clipboard back, Dennis gets out and peers sternly at the dog. As Dennis walks around the front of the van, an older woman with her hair pinned up approaches.
Here, boy. Come on.
Dennis Rader. What on earth are you up to now?
Dennis shushes her, putting a finger to his lips.
You are such a character, Dennis.
She spots the dog.
You leave Mary's dog alone, Dennis. Come on in and have a cup of tea.
He sneaks out every day.
Dennis?
Dennis removes a dart gun.
It's just a tranquilizer gun. It's not going to hurt him.
I can't watch this. I'll see you in church.
See you Sunday.
Dennis waves and the woman goes inside. The compliance officer creeps up on the dog.
Good boy.
The dog sits beside an open gate.
Good boy.
Dennis aims. Later, he carries the dog into an animal hospital.
Waking up, aren't you? Huh?
Hey, Debbie. How's your mom doing?
Much better. She wanted me to thank you for the flowers.
Oh, it was nothing. Glad she's okay.
There we go. In you go, Max.
As Dennis unloads Max, Debbie works near the TV.
We have a need.
Got a dog for you.
Dennis gives Debbie the paperwork.
I'll check on your cat in 1 second, Mrs. Cudney.
Dennis peers toward the waiting area.
Absolutely, and I probably know more about BTK than BTK does.
So you think he's still alive?
As Dennis watches the TV, Debbie hands him two dog collars.
Well, we don't really know. A lot of people have...
Kind of sad, isn't it? Somebody must have really loved those dogs.
I have considered that, but there's also the possibility that he's very much alive and still living in Wichita. And in fact, there is a possibility that he could be watching this interview as we speak, relishing it, which is kind of sickening.
You say in the book that he did seem to enjoy the attention.
Oh, I think he craved it, yes.
Dennis frowns. Now he steers the compliance van into his driveway. He throws the van into park and gets out. Carrying the dog collars and his key ring, Dennis opens a waist-high chain-link gate to the backyard. He strides past the garage to an adjoining shed. Dennis opens a screen door, then unlocks a solid inner door. Slipping into the dark shed, he shuts the door behind him. He stands motionless, silhouetted against the door's window, a pane of tinted glass that reduces the incoming daylight to a dull green glow. He flicks on a light, revealing a desk against unfinished walls.
We thought maybe he was gone.
He adds the collar to a pail of collars.
Dead or in jail or... Maybe we were just hoping.
Flinging his keys onto the desk, Dennis stands in the middle of the cramped room. He mops his brow. Behind him, exposed 2x4s act as shelves for cans and jars. Dennis glances toward a wall to his left, pushes aside a bin, and slams an attaché case onto the desk. Next, he drags out a tattered cardboard box filled with file folders. Now, he opens a desk drawer.
But he was still there.
Dennis removes the drawer's false bottom.
Sleeping beast. Something had just woke him up.
Dennis takes out a manila folder and slowly pulls off a pair of pantyhose binding it.
You can't tell my story.
Dennis wads the pantyhose in one hand and solemnly removes a 2-inch-thick manuscript from the envelope. He eyes its title page. BTK Chronicles, A Serial Killer is Born. As Dennis reaches for a radio on the corner of the desk, the shed's reddish light glints on his wedding ring. Dennis leans back in his chair and shuffles to the manuscript's first page.
This is my story, the story of BT Kennedy. It's a damn good story and a true one, and it will be remembered. As God is my witness.
Dennis removes his uniform jacket. His paunch swells tightly under his khaki shirt. He stands, unbuckles his utility belt, and lays it aside. Next, he removes an 18-inch plastic tube from a shelf, unscrews its cap, and pours its contents out on the desk. Amid the clutter, pairs of panties and a spattering of jewelry tumble out. Dennis leaves the items lying near his computer and pours out more. Dennis dumps out a pair of ladies' cotton briefs and a driver's license. His hand halts on a child's cotton shirt patterned with soccer balls. Gazing wistfully, Dennis turns the material over with his fingers. Dennis grips the shirt tightly and rings it over his keyboard. Our view fogs to white, and a single-floor house with a small front stoop at its aluminum front door appears. Words read, Otero House, 15 January 1974. As two boys and a girl exit the house, a young, bespectacled man in a white Park City compliance van watches intently.
On January 15th, 1974, I maliciously, intentionally, in premeditation killed Joseph Otero.
All right, Mr. Rader, I need to find out more information.
A flashback. In his van, the young Dennis puts on a wool hat and rubber gloves.
Well, I had did some thinking on what I was going to do to either Mrs. Otero or Josephine. I basically broke into the house, or didn't break into the house, but I came in the house and confronted the family, and then we went from there.
In the house, a boy butters toast.
I think one of the kids, I think the Joseph, opened the door. Probably let the dog out because the dog was in the house at that time.
The boy backs slowly away as Dennis enters. His gloved hand touches Joseph's shoulder, then slides down his arm and grips his wrist. On the walls, pictures show the Otero family's smiling faces. In the courtroom, the judge peers at the defendant.
Did you know these people?
No, that's,
A female counselor whispers in Dennis's ear.
No, that was part of my, I guess my what you call fantasy. These people were selected.
Now, in the Otero house, the killer shoves a black-haired woman across a breakfast table. Milk and orange juice spill. He grips the woman's arm. On the bed, his gloved hand touches her face. Dennis takes a coiled rope from his kit.
At that time, I tied them up. At that time, the whole family just went, they went panicked on me, so I worked pretty quick.
He binds the woman's wrists.
They started complaining that about being tied up. So I re-loosened the bonds.
Dennis empties a bread bag.
Then I went over to Junior and put the bag on his head. After that, Mrs. Otero woke back up. And she was pretty upset what's going on. And so I go back over and at that point in time strangled her for the death strangle.
He ushers a teenage girl downstairs.
What did you do then?
After that, I took the other one to the basement. And killed her.
As Dennis leaves the basement alone, he runs his glove finger along the stairwell railing. Outside, a golden retriever sits on the stoop. Inside, a child's fashion doll lies dropped on its side, and a flower pot sits overturned on the kitchen floor. Back in court.
Did you do anything else at the time?
Yes, I had some sexual fantasy, but that was after she was dead.
Dennis's fingers twitch. Nearby, a middle-aged Hispanic man's lips tremble. A staring woman clings to his arm. Magida and a female officer look on.
I first encountered BTK when I was 27 years old.
Police light strobe.
I'd been on the force for about 3 years. Done some routine traffic stops, some domestic disturbance stuff.
Nighttime. At the Otero home, paramedics wheel bodies past uniformed officers.
Parents when they get home from school. Gay roadside saw them when Magida and I got here.
The oldest boy sent his brother and sister to stop the little ones from coming home and finding their folks. My dad. He didn't know they were inside with the parents.
So who found them?
Young Magida shifts on his feet.
Oh, we did. The boy was in the bedroom and...
Magida gives the covered body a sickly glance.
Little girl was... Excuse me, that one just hurt you.
Yeah, sure.
Magida shambles across the yard and stoops forward near a bush.
They say there are some things you can't unsee. This would be one of them.
The officer wipes his mouth and gazes toward the paramedics. By the front stoop, the sergeant watches, with his hands pocketed in his overcoat. Small groups of civilians stare. Cameramen follow the passing gurneys.
We all changed that night. All of us. The whole town. He did that to us.
Daytime. A woman exits a house with the older Magida. They approach a station wagon.
Becky, come on. If you want to ride, it's time.
March 2004. A red-haired teenager follows.
Sorry, Dad.
Magida's wife wears a pink V-neck sweater.
Is that a change of clothes?
Shut up.
Becky kisses her mother's cheek.
Bye, Mom.
As Magida kisses his wife goodbye, Becky gets into the station wagon.
See you, beautiful.
Bye, handsome. Keep the world safe.
Always.
Now in the shed, Dennis moves his lips as he reads. A shadow appears on the door's window.
Come in.
Dennis's wife peeks in, a worried look on her plump face.
You're going to be late for work.
He checks his watch.
Oops. Thanks. Thank you. I just want to finish this church business. I'll be right out.
I'll make you eggs to go.
Thank you, honey.
He sets the manuscript down. Later, type words from the manuscript drift by. Death, sexual, BTK.
Factor X whispers in my ear. Factor X whispers in my ear. Tells me to kill. I have no choice, so I do. I troll. I stalk, then I kill.
I have no choice, so I do. I troll.
Endo-sweet.
Then I kill. Endo-sweet sexual relief.
So I do. I troll. I stalk, then I kill. Endo-sweet sexual relief.
Now on a street in town, a cafe sign reads, Cousin's Diner. The balding Dennis, wearing his uniform, goes inside. Patrons sit at the counter and fill tables along the wall. Dennis spots a kid sitting on his mother's knee. Smiling, Dennis puts his thumbs to his ears, sticks out his tongue, and wiggles his fingers. The boy rocks with delight. Dennis trades a smile with the boy's mother, then sits at the counter. A waitress with reddish blonde hair approaches.
Hi there, what can I get you?
Hi.
Dennis smiles and stares.
May I take your order?
Oh. I was... You're new here, huh? Salad?
Yep, started yesterday.
Oh, welcome, Sally. I'll have a number one lunch special and an iced tea with three ice cubes and maybe some of that peanut butter pie.
Three ice cubes.
Yeah, started as a joke, then it became a regular thing.
Three ice cubes it is.
You have very beautiful hair.
What?
Your hair. Very beautiful.
Thanks.
How long is it?
The young mother interjects.
Excuse me. I'm sorry to interrupt. I think I know you. Mr. Rader, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were my brother's scout leader. You remember Tim Ashton?
Yes, Tim. Couldn't tie a knot.
Oh, he still can't. Anyway, you know, he just loved you.
Oh, thanks. Tell him hi for me, will you?
I'll do that.
Tell him you better be working on that clove hitch.
Oh, okay. Come on, honey. Let's go. You take care now.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Dennis smiles jovially and swivels to face the lunch counter. He glances after the mother leaving with her boy, then stares at Sally, taking an order a couple of stools down. Later in the darkened shed, he tugs on a latex glove, then flexes both gloved hands. Now he ties a thick cord into a knot. He fixes a loop around his hand, draws the loose end around once, and gives a sharp tug. His cheeks tense as he tightens the knot. Back in the courtroom.
I had many what I call them projects. Different people in the town I followed, watched. Catherine Bright was one of the next targets, I guess, as I would indicate.
How did you select her?
I was just driving by one day, and I saw her go in the house with somebody else. I thought that's a possibility.
4 April 1974.
I broke into the house and waited for her to come home. She and Kevin Bright came in. I wasn't expecting him to be there, and come to find out, I guess they were related.
Were you armed with a handgun at that time also?
Yes. I had the Magnum in my shoulder holster. The other one was a .22. I used the .22, shot him. I thought he was down for good that time.
Now Catherine Bright screams under Dennis's calm face. On the floor, Kevin's eye flutters open, his face stained with blood. He crawls away.
I'll tell you what I thought. I thought the police were coming at that time. I heard the door open. I thought, you know, that's it. And I stepped out there, and he I could see him running down the street, so I quickly cleaned up everything I could and left. If I had the proper equipment with me, my special kill kit, Kevin Bright would probably be dead today.
In the courtroom.
I'm not bragging on that. That's just a matter of fact.
Dennis nods in his suit and tie. Back in the shed, Dennis digs a tied bundle of folders and envelopes from a drawer. Wearing latex gloves, he separates out a clear plastic baggie, peels back a duct tape seal, and gingerly removes a driver's license and several Polaroid snapshots. His lips tremble as he looks at the photos. He lays the license and photos out on a document. Its typewritten lines zigzag across the page.
No one knows. Now, they will.
His fever gaze stays on the photos of a woman on a bed. 19 March 2004, a man runs up the steps to the Wichita police station.
It had been almost 30 years since his last communication with us. But in the spring of 2004, he sent a letter to the paper reminding us that he was still out there.
Excuse me.
Can I help you?
It's Hurst Laviana from the Eagle. I need to talk to Detective Magida.
Magida, Baines, and Hurst enter an office.
All right, let's see this. Kept those photos for 20 years. He's alive. This was just mailed to you at the paper?
Yeah.
You tell anybody else about this?
No, I brought it straight here. EMS removed her body before the cops got there.
Yeah, I remember. There was a screw-up. They tried to pin the murder on the husband.
It was him. He killed her, Jason. Nobody else could have taken those.
Maybe someone found a box of his stuff in an attic and they're trying...
No, special signature's right here. We didn't make this public.
A symbol shows a downward arrow under a sideways B.
The damn boogeyman is back.
Give me a couple days with this, will you, Hurst?
The reporter nods and starts for the door.
It's my story. I break it.
Absolutely.
He leaves. Baines faces Magida.
So what do we do now?
Bill Thomas Kilman, BTK. All right, he gave us a return address... We'll get the letter in the envelope process for DNA and prints and get us a warrant and see what we find.
Now outside a small white house, Magida checks his palm.
This is the return address on the envelope.
You ever think about using a pad?
Saving a tree.
Police towed a battering ram inside Dennis's house.
Come go.
Thank you for a delicious fun.
Well, thank you for the surprise visit.
I was in the neighborhood.
Still, it was a very nice thing to do.
He clears plates.
Hi-ho, hi-ho. Call you later.
His wife smiles. Outside, officers hustle toward the small white house. On the stoop, Magida and Baines part for the officer with a battering ram. Inside, at a mirror, Dennis tweaks his mustache. Magida and Baines barge in, guns drawn. The house is completely empty.
Clear. Clear in here.
We're clear.
Clear in the back.
I don't get it. Why is he back? Where has he been all these years? What's he doing?
Magida and Baines stand face to face in the bare room. Now, in a residential neighborhood, Dennis crosses from his van to a retaining wall. He puts down a clipboard and Polaroid camera and uses a tape measure to check the length of the grass. As a fit young woman comes out of the house, Dennis smiles.
Excuse me.
Hey there.
Can I help you?
Is this your lawn?
Yeah.
Let it go a little bit, huh? It's okay. I'm not going to cite you, but you need to keep it trimmed. The law.
Okay.
You have a nice day.
As the woman backs away, Dennis crouches and aims the camera at the grass. Without looking at her, he plucks a dandelion from the lawn and affixes it to the clipboard with his papers. As the apprehensive woman disappears inside, he keeps writing. Now, Baines and Magida work, surrounded by open file boxes.
This is all BTK.
You think he's gonna kill again? I mean, the guy's gotta be pretty old by now.
I don't know what he's gonna do. Back in 78, he said there's no cure except death.
Or being caught and put away.
Said that after he killed, he just went home and about his life like anybody else.
You think with all this stuff, they'd have caught him.
My mom died, still afraid this guy was going to jump out of a closet.
Now a pasty-faced blonde woman arrives at the animal hospital.
Excuse me? Hi, I'm Mary Baxter. My dog's here, Max. Dennis Rader. He took my dog. He left me this note.
Yes, he's here.
Oh, thank God. I'm sorry, Look, let me just pay the fine and get out of here. $250,
actually,
right?
Actually, Mr. Rader said he can't release Max until you meet with him. Seems this isn't the first time.
What? Can he do that? Look, I'll put up a new fence. I'll make sure Max never gets out again.
He said to call him.
Fine. Whatever. Can you give me his number?
The attendant jots on a piece of paper.
Here you go. You need to speak to Mr. Rader before next Thursday. There's a 5-day time limit.
5-day time limit.
After 5 days, if no one's claimed the dog, then we have to put him down.
Mary gapes. Now at the diner, Magida pays for 2 coffees.
Thanks, Sally.
Want to change?
No.
Thanks.
The detective heads out, passing right behind Dennis, who sits at the lunch counter in his compliance officer uniform. The killer glances at Sally, then resumes writing busily on his clipboard. Sally works her jaw uneasily, looks around, and approaches.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. What do you have today?
I will have the number one lunch special and an iced tea.
3 ice cubes.
Good memory. I'm flattered.
Pie?
Don't mind if I do. Here.
He offers a page torn off a notepad.
It's for you.
What is it?
It's a poem. I wrote it for you.
Dennis smiles tightly. Sally nods.
We were looking for Manson, some crazy-looking guy with a swastika burned into his forehead. Or a biker covered with jailhouse tats.
They try to find me. They look and search, but they cannot. Because I am them.
Typewritten phrases drift by, overlaying Dennis in his shed reading his manuscript.
We had no clues, no description. He could be anyone. He could be anywhere.
Magida tucks in Becky.
Every generation has that moment, that loss of innocence. The moment they realize the world isn't a safe place.
He sits tensely in his living room.
How do you tell your family they're not safe anymore?
Magida's wife approaches him.
Hey.
The detective gives a sullen nod and mouths the word, yup. His wife sits beside him and drapes her arm over his shoulder.
You'll catch him.
This makes no sense. Serial killers don't disappear for 15 years and then come back for no reason.
Did you talk to the guy from TV?
What guy?
The guy that's writing the book. The lawyer guy. I saw him on a morning talk show. He's writing a book about BTK.
When did you see this?
Wednesday, I think.
That's why he came out. He doesn't want somebody else getting the attention.
Now on a stovetop, a teapot steams. Dennis turns off the burner. He pours tea into a happy-faced mug and carries it into the living room where his wife sits, bundled up on the couch.
This is throat coat tea. Got it at that new healthy place. It's got licorice and slippery as hell.
I'll be fine. You go to work.
You sure?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
It's good?
Mm.
I'll call you later.
Don't worry so much. I didn't get to your lunch. I'm sorry.
Now who's worrying? You just get better.
Now Dennis patrols a sunny neighborhood in the compliance van. Elsewhere, Magida walks with Robert Beatty.
There's a theory of suspect zero. It says that if a person randomly killed with no attachment, no remorse, he or she could continue to kill and never be caught until he decided he wanted to be.
Right.
You think he wants to be cop?
I think this guy's about ego, power, control.
I agree.
He resurfaced just after your appearance, Mr. Beatty. We think you pissed him off a little. We think he wants to be heard.
Why weren't people informed about this? I mean, if this man is out there, then
they will be.
Don't
informed.
They deserve to be
yes,
informed?
They will. No, but for the moment, I need your help.
How can you people know
Mr. Beatty,
as much as I do. You probably know more. What is it you want me to do?
You can do what you've been doing. Out there talking, doing interviews. But we want you to coordinate with us. We want to press this guy, force his hand a little. We want him communicating, not killing.
Now with the chief of police.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming. I've called this press conference because we received a communication we're sure is from the BTK killer. What? He's still out there.
Now, we also believe he is responsible for the 1986 murder of Vicki Wegerle.
Dennis eats dinner as he watches the broadcast.
...occurring in the 70s and 80s. Now, we don't wish to alarm anyone. We simply want to reemphasize that the person known as BTK is still at large. And there's a need for special precautions and awareness by everyone.
Dennis watches his wife turn off the TV.
I prayed he was dead. I prayed so hard. I prayed for this death.
No, honey. Relax. You're safe. You're safe here with me. Hmm? Oh, there.
Dennis hugs her tightly, pats her back, and caresses her head.
There.
He smiles to himself. At the church.
God has brought us a challenge. He has placed before us a test of our resolve, a test of our spirit, and a test of our faith.
In a pew, Dennis and his wife swap a look.
And we were tested. We started doubting each other, fearing each other.
A man buys a gun.
He had killed 10 people, and now we were just waiting to see when he'd strike again.
A police supply store advertises firearms.
People stop saying hello to strangers on the street. No more smiles, no more friendly nods. Everyone was a suspect.
A man and girl walking switch sides as they pass a young man.
A rumor started that he went after women with long hair, so women cut their hair.
Long-haired women wait outside a salon.
We changed the way we looked, the way we thought, the way we felt. We were a city under siege all over again. None of us had any idea when it would end.
In church.
Or how.
Now I would like to ask you to all join hands and pray for a quick resolution of this terrible crisis. Let us pray that the BTK strangler be apprehended soon so that our community may live in peace. Let us pray.
Let us pray.
Dennis holds hands with his wife and the parishioner at his other side. They bow their heads. Later, congregants greet the pastor as they exit. Dennis faces the clergyman.
Excellent service, Reverend. When you get a moment, can I talk to you about my plans to expand to Sunday school?
Actually, Dennis, I was hoping to talk to you for a moment.
Certainly.
The nominating committee has asked me to invite you to stand as president for the church council later this year.
Well... Thank you.
Dennis faces his smiling wife. Now outside a TV station, Magida meets Beatty.
All set?
All set, I guess.
They approach a secure door and a chain link fence.
Now I know how the worm feels.
They head in. Now inside Cousin's Diner, Dennis checks his messages.
This is the cell phone for Dennis Rader, compliance supervisor. Please leave a message.
You have 8 new messages. This is Mary Baxter again. I just want to get Max back. Please, call me. My number again is 555-0130. I'll meet you at any time. I don't care. Call me at 555-0130. Message deleted. This is Mary Baxter. I keep calling you. Please. They won't give me my dog back until I talk to you. Please. Message deleted. Hi, Mr. Rader. This is Mary Baxter again.
A waiter approaches.
Hey there. What can I get you?
Oh,
Dennis closes his cell and looks the waiter up and down.
We'll catch him.
Sally working today?
Sally switched to nights.
She did?
Yeah, better tips, I guess. So what'll you have?
Number one lunch special and iced tea.
Coming up.
His eyes narrow. Dennis watches Beatty's interview.
I think it's just a matter of time. And you know, some communities would crumble under circumstances such as these. Others rise to the occasion. I think we'll get them. I think it'll be soon. I think we'll put an end to this terror. And it'll be our finest hour.
Dennis stands.
And what about yourself? Are you at all nervous that he may come after you?
You okay?
The waiter eyes Dennis, who takes out his wallet and slaps a $10 bill on the counter.
Here. Keep the change.
You want to take your lunch with you?
Well, Mr. Robert Beatty, thank you very much.
No.
Thank you.
Not hungry anymore.
The waiter watches Dennis head for the door, then reaches for the money. Later, in his van, Dennis travels through a residential neighborhood. He pulls up in front of a modest blue house. Now he steps up to the front door. Mary opens up.
Mrs. Baxter, I just got your messages.
She spits in his face.
Murderer.
My phone was out of order.
You waited 5 days.
That
on purpose. You let them kill my dog. You killed Max. I hope you burn in hell, you demented bastard.
He wipes his cheek and jacket.
How could you? Why would you do this?
Dennis grabs the screen door and puts his face close to Mary's.
Because I can.
Mary's blue eyes stare blankly at the compliance officer as he turns and walks away. As he heads back to the van, he removes his glasses and wipes the lenses. Now in the shed, Dennis's shadow looms in the door window as he unlocks it. Dennis quickly slips inside, selects a dog collar from the pail beside the door, and wraps it around his fist. He throws the belt down, grabs his kill kit, and opens it. He brandishes a pistol recklessly.
You have no idea who I am.
He puts the gun down and reaches for the plastic tube. Unscrewing the cap with shaky hands, he dumps the contents into the open attaché case. He opens a wallet, revealing a driver's license with a young woman's picture on it.
But you know, don't you?
He takes out the ID card and stares at the picture.
You know who I am, don't you?
He holds the photo close to his mouth.
You know who I am, don't you?
Words, Nancy Fox, home, 8 December, 1977.
Nancy Fox was another one of the projects. When I was trolling the area, I noticed her go into the house one night. Sometimes I would, anyway, put her down as a potential victim.
So you were not working in any form or fashion?
Well,
you were just...
I don't know if...
He rubs his brow.
You know... Read much about serial killers, but they go through what they call the different phases. That's one of the phases they go through, is as a trolling stage. And basically you're looking for a victim at that time, and that you could be trolling for months or years, but once you lock in on a certain person, then you become a stalking, and that might be several of them, but you really home in on that person, and they basically become that's the victim, or at least you want them to be.
At the Fox home.
I dropped by once to check her mailbox, see what her name was, and where she worked. I stopped by there once, Hellsburg.
He cuts an electrical cable.
Kind of sized her up. The more I knew about a person, the more I felt comfortable with it.
Young Dennis breaks a basement window. Now in a bedroom, Nancy sets down her purse. A door opens and Dennis steps in with a gloved finger to his lips. He attacks, wrestling her against the wall. Later, he carefully handcuffs Nancy's wrists. Emptying her purse, he finds the driver's license. Now in the courtroom.
I confronted her, told her there I had a problem, sexual problem, that I would have to tie her up and have sex with her.
On a bed, nylons bind Nancy's ankles. Dennis leans on her back.
She's a little upset. We talk for a while. She smokes a cigarette.
He drags a scarf along her cheek.
I took the belt and then strangled her with the belt at that time.
On a payphone.
You will find a homicide at 76 South Pershing. Nancy Fox.
Dennis drops the receiver, picks up his kill kit, and strolls off. Now in the shed, young Dennis sits at a typewriter.
He sent a letter to KWHA-TV. In it, he said, "They're a psycho running loose, strangling women. Who will be next? How many people do I have to kill before I get my name in the paper?"
A blurred view of young Dennis shows him reading his newly typed letter. Now the middle-aged Dennis sits at the desk and lifts the pantyhose around the back of his neck. With a calm, fevered gaze, he stretches them tight around his own throat. You are listening to video description on the SAP channel. To return to regular program audio, turn off the SAP feature on your TV or VCR. Now in a quiet residential neighborhood, a little girl with her blonde hair tied up in a ponytail chases a kickball across the street. Nearby, the white compliance van rolls past the houses. At the wheel, Dennis squeezes a tennis ball in one hand. Fluffy clouds hang low in the sky. Meanwhile, at the KNBS-TV station, an unmarked sedan pulls up. Megita and Baines get out and rush inside. A sign over a desk reads, KNBS-TV First in News. Megita approaches a man at the desk.
Jerry Slovin.
The worker points to a bearded man.
Mr. Slovin?
They enter Slovin's office.
Detectives.
Megita, this is Detective Baines. Can we see the letter?
This came in the mail this morning. God, the girl at the front desk almost had a heart attack. Had to give her the day off.
Thomas B. King. TBK. Cute. 408 Wade Street.
Probably empty or doesn't exist. I'll get somebody to check it out.
As Baines leaves the office, Slovin faces Megita.
Is this about another murder?
Let's hope not.
A printout shows photocopies of a badge and an ID.
What's with this, these chapter headings? You really think he's writing a book?
Megita flips through half a dozen pages, settling on a list of chapter titles.
Serial killer is born. Dawn, fetish, fantasy world. The search begins. BTK haunts. Treasured memories. Please don't go public with this just yet. We want to control this information.
Look, with all due respect, Detective, this is news. If this guy is out
Look,
there...
Look, we're trying to avoid panic.
Panic? Detective, my wife takes karate lessons and is carrying a handgun. She won't sleep in our bedroom because it's on the first floor. My son, he wants to move. My daughter, she has nightmares.
Baines returns.
Look, in me, my blood pressure's going through the roof. So how about this? Let's spend a little less time on PR and a little more time on trying to catch this psycho.
Mr. Slovin, we are doing everything we can to catch this guy. It is a difficult time for everyone, but if you in any way hinder our pursuit, I will personally see to
Megita, it. Megita, we should go back to the station.
Megita meets his partner's intent gaze and follows her out. Slovin watches them cross toward the door. Exiting the station, Megita glances warily at Dennis's envelope. He pushes the door shut.
Smug little...
They head for the car.
They're all looking at us, you know. I see it on the street, and restaurants are all looking at us. Why can't we catch this
we'll
guy?
We'll get him. He's talking to us. He's doing what we want. We'll catch him.
Now Dennis's compliance van parks at a fenced yard. As a man and two children walk by, Dennis waves.
Hello.
Smiling, Dennis watches them pass. He unscrews his thermos lid, pours himself a drink, and carefully sets aside the thermos bottle. Sipping his beverage, Dennis surveys the surrounding lawns. Now in the ops room, Megita takes off his jacket as he faces Baines and a table cluttered with papers.
Anything on the tip line?
We've had close to 200 calls already.
Anything worth a damn?
Not unless you count the guy who thinks his dog is BTK because he came home with a bra in his mouth.
Well, let's find out where that bra came from. Gents, we got saliva from the stamp in the envelope. Let's get DNA from any suspect we ever liked. We'll run it through Sedgwick. We don't get a match. We'll run it through the national basis. And we need names of every inmate got out of a Kansas prison this last year. Same drill Sedgwick, then the national basis. And I want swabs from every cop... It was on the job back then.
That's going to piss some people off.
Megita shrugs his arms wide.
I know it.
On an easel, a page shows alphanumeric columns.
Geez, I hate word puzzles.
My 10th grade math teacher, Mr. Noah, used to make us do these. I sucked at it.
I used to do the crossword every day. The only thing I learned is that oleo is a four-letter word for butter. What do you think he wants us to know?
He wants us to know he's out there.
Now, as a blonde teenage girl bicycles to a shingled house, Dennis drives by and cranes for a look at her. The teen leans her bike against the stair rail and goes inside. Down the road, Dennis squints into the rearview mirror. Now in the shed, Dennis sits hunched forward under the sallow light of a desk lamp. As our view creeps up behind his chair and looks over his arm, we discover he's drawing a picture of a girl with long hair. Thick black lines depict cords that bind her shoulders and gag her mouth. Dennis's pen tip goes over and over the mouth gag. Nighttime. Through sheer curtains, inside a room, we watch Magida's wife and daughter walk up to their front door. We see Mrs. Magida through the door's frosted glass window. She unlocks the door, opens it, and peers into the dark foyer. She cranes her head toward a room off to one side, then faces Becky.
Rebecca, just wait here for a second.
Why? Just wait.
Becky obediently takes a step back and stands motionless as her mother slowly enters the house. She reaches for a wall switch and turns on a light. Mrs. Magida inches down a hallway and peers around a corner.
Honey?
Mom?
Jason?
What's wrong?
As her daughter watches from the front stoop, Mrs. Magida steps past a closed closet door toward the kitchen. She slowly turns and swings the door open. Mrs. Magida jumps back against the wall and covers her mouth with her hand. She turns on the kitchen light and walks to the phone. She puts the phone back down on the counter. Mrs. Magida freezes, her eyes wide. She takes a butcher knife from the drawer and glances behind her. Outside, Becky stares worriedly down the empty hallway. Crossing the kitchen with cautious steps, Mrs. Magida holds the knife in front of her. She steps into her daughter's view.
Mom, what's wrong?
Mrs. Magida makes a shushing motion, then moves to the shadowy end of the kitchen near a back door. Immediately to the right of the back door, the wall frames a side door, slightly ajar. Mrs. Magida tiptoes to the back door and pushes aside a flimsy curtain over its window. She peers toward the backyard. She stands frozen. Mrs. Magida faces the side door, backing away from it with the knife held ready. She lifts her free hand to her face, stifling tears, then slowly moves closer. Mrs. Magida holds the blade in one hand as she reaches for the door with the other. She pushes it open, sees a man, and slashes.
Help! 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 Oh,
what are you doing?
Magida steps out holding his arm.
Oh, my God, Jason! Oh, God, I am so sorry.
Becky runs in.
Oh, God,
no,
I am sorry.
No.
Let me see, let me see.
Oh, no, no, there's nothing there. Nothing there. Oh. What were you doing?
And I thought I heard a noise.
It's okay. I'm just getting charcoal for the grill.
Becky watches her parents hug each other. Magida rubs his wife's back. Then both parents look to their daughter. Now, in a dark SUV, Dennis sits parked across from Cousin's Diner. In its window, Sally laughs as she takes an order from two customers. In the SUV, Dennis's frown deepens. He sits motionless, staring intently from under his furrowed brow. Daytime. A preteen boy pedals a bicycle down a sunny street. As he nears the corner, his gaze fixes on a stop sign and a manila envelope taped to its post. The boy hops off his bike and takes down the envelope. He sees BTK Fieldgram typed on its label.
Over the next 3 months, the communications continued.
Now in a library.
The federal government granted an additional $1 million because of what they call the implied threat.
A librarian finds an envelope on a cart. It reads, "To Wichita PD from BTK." Now at a taped-off UPS bin, detectives examine a collage.
I see it.
It shows magazine models with crudely drawn gags and bindings around their mouths and limbs.
We had more people, more money, more equipment, and still felt no closer to catching the guy.
Magida looks up from the evidence bags containing the collage and other correspondence from the killer. He tightens his lips. Now in the ops room, forensic photos of BTK's victims cover the walls. Typewritten phrases from the manuscript drift by. Sexual death and death on a cold January morning. A woman's driver's license hangs above images of her bound body. A newspaper article shows another victim and reads, "Shirley Vian, mother killed March 17, 1977. A blow-up of the BTK symbol hangs next to a photo of a blonde victim lying face down. Magida studies the highly organized displays. The spacious one-room op center contains a maze-like arrangement of desks, filing cabinets, and work lights. Uniformed officers carry file boxes, shouldering past each other. Along a far wall, the detectives study the crime scene photos of bloodstains and knotted cords. Baines shifts her gaze from the wall photographs to a folder containing more evidence. The chief joins the detectives, eyeing the wall of photos with a grim frown. He addresses Magida.
You ready to do this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go.
Good. Let's go talk to the people.
Leaving with the chief, Magida takes out a notepad and scans it. They enter a hallway.
What if it's all crap? What if all this information this guy's sending us is just, you know...
But maybe something good will come of it. The main thing is we keep communicating.
Now at a press conference.
Since March of this year, BTK has sent numerous communications to the media and to the police. In these letters, he has provided certain background information which he claims is accurate. The following information is being released to the public in hopes of identifying BTK. He claims that he was born in 1939. That would make him age 64 or 65 today. His father died in World War II, and he was raised by his mother and his grandparents.
At the Raider House.
His family always lived near the railroad. He took part in outdoor hobbies, hunting, fishing, camping.
Dennis and his wife watched TV.
1960, he went to Tech Military School, thereafter enlisted in the Army, went active duty.
I don't understand why a killer would go and tell the police all those things about himself.
Maybe he was lying.
As Mrs. Rader sits down at the dinner table, Dennis squints at the screen. He bows his head. Now at the Magida house, the detective looks over a pile of case photos scattered on the floor. As he examines pictures of the victims, he jots notes on a legal pad. Keeping his head down, Magida focuses on the gruesome photos and sketches. Rachel comes downstairs and steps up behind him.
Honey, please come upstairs.
In a while, sweetie.
She sees the photos.
Oh, my God, Jason.
Don't look at these.
Hey, Dad. Alan's on the phone.
Don't come down here.
Did she say what you wanted?
She said it's really important, and she's coming over to pick you up.
Right away?
Yep.
We got something.
On a residential street.
Anonymous tip. Guy fits most of BTK criteria, and he has an outstanding warrant.
For what?
Housing code violations.
Kidding, aren't you?
Hey, an outstanding warrant is an outstanding warrant.
Oh, I don't know. Can't just go banging into houses. What if it's not the right guy? Talk about raising a panic.
An officer busts open the door to a house. Magida and Baines follow the police down a yellow hallway.
Put your hands in the air!
A gray-haired man wearing pajamas exits a room with his hands up. As the suspect passes by, Magida presses his lips tight and glances at his partner with a knitted brow. Daytime at the Raider house.
Police haven't confirmed anything about last night's arrest and won't release the Hispanic man's name. Sources say that the man in custody
will
find suspect in the BTK killing.
At the police station.
DNA came back negative. The press is going to have a field day with this.
Now in a prison.
Roger Valdez has been cleared as a BTK suspect and released today. Police deny the arrest had anything to do with the serial killer, who remains at large.
As the guard opens a gate, Megita steps forward. Wearing an orange jumpsuit, Roger Valdez walks out of a holding cell. The innocent man eyes the detective as he leaves. Now outside, Dennis carries a bouquet of flowers by a sign that reads, Green Tree Retirement Home. Heading inside, he nods at a passing attendant, then approaches a gray-haired woman sitting at a table. He gently touches her back. She grins and pats his hand. Dennis continues to the front of the room, where a black and white program plays on a TV. As a nurse escorts an elderly gentleman away, Dennis smiles at a petite red-headed woman on a couch and offers the flowers. The woman beams.
Hi, sweetie.
Hi, Mom.
Do I have the best son? I just want to finish my show.
Dennis takes a seat next to his mother and looks at the TV. On screen, a man in a trench coat faces a woman. Dennis smiles at his mother. Nighttime, outside the police department. Baines passes two officers on her way down a flight of stairs. With her keys in hand, she steps into the parking lot and spots Megita leaning on his station wagon.
Taking off?
Yeah, you should take off, too.
Yeah.
He lowers his head.
You okay?
We interviewed thousands of guys. We swabbed over 1,500 of them. Regular swab-a-thon.
Bane studies his sullen face.
What's left? Lab's working 24/7. We're 6 weeks behind, so maybe we get lucky, maybe not. In the meantime, we got no DNA match. Quantico's got nothing. The shrinks can't help us. I'm beginning to think we can't get this guy. I'm beginning to think this guy's a friggin' ghost.
Now at the church.
And lastly, but certainly not least, my friends, it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you the new president of our church council, Dennis Rader. Dennis, why don't you come up here and lead us in prayer?
Rising from a front pew, Dennis proudly steps forward. He shakes the pastor's hand, then faces the congregation.
Thank you. This is, a verse from Psalm 133, I think, says it pretty good. How good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity.
As his wife smiles, Dennis nods and gleefully looks at the pastor. Now at the KWA TV station.
Well, as long as legal and the FCC say it's okay, I'm all for it. How long would the messages be?
Quantico says the optimal length for a subliminal message is 0.2 seconds.
I think this is crazy, but...
You said you'd try anything.
Yeah. All right, we're good to go. Excuse me. Mr. Bader, thank you very much for coming to me.
Thank you for having me.
And what makes you think you know more about BTK than he knows about himself?
Well, something that you have to understand about a man of this type is that he's not functioning in the rational world. He's what I call an extreme savage narcissist. He's so self-absorbed. He's so
in a control room, the reporter watches the interview with Megita and Baines.
Inflated delusions of grandeur that...
Okay, back it up and give us frame by frame.
A technician rewinds the tape and plays it back slowly. A white image flashes on screen. The tech freezes on it. The words, "Now call the chief," appear over a graphic of eyeglasses.
What's with the glasses?
He left his glasses at the Nancy Fox killing. How many of those messages are in the interview?
4.
Megita studies the screen, then turns to his partner.
Let's hope it works.
She nods. Now at the animal hospital, Dennis puts a dog in a cage.
The last time. Help.
He's not functioning in the rational world. He's what I call an extreme savage.
You got the collar for me, Debbie?
Yeah, sure.
So self-absorbed.
Dennis watches the interview.
What do you do with them anyway?
Records.
There's no possibility that they ever have the ability to look inward.
Later, in his shed, dog collars fill Dennis's bucket. At his desk, Dennis uses his teeth to tighten twine around a fashion doll's hands. Wearing gloves, he paints her lips with a red marker. Next, he covers the doll's head with a clear plastic bag and winds a cord around her neck. Dennis punches a hole in Nancy Fox's driver's license and ties it to the doll. The serial killer stares at a photo of Sally on his desk and strokes it. He furrows his brow and stares intensely at the picture. Now alongside a baseball field, a white-haired man walks a German Shepherd past some bleachers. Stopping, he notices a white plastic bag hanging from one of the benches. Later, police comb the area.
This guy's sending us his autobiography, chapter by chapter.
It's Nancy Fox.
Baines holds the doll.
Something's about to happen. He's moving the location of his drops away from downtown. He's branching out. He's getting bolder. Taking risks.
Take risks. Maybe you make mistakes. Maybe you get sloppy.
Maybe we get a break.
In the shed, Dennis inserts an index card into a typewriter. He feeds it in neatly and types with his curled index fingers.
Date. Week of 1-17-2005. Where? Between 69th N and 77th N on Seneca Street. Contents. Audi's box. C9. PJ Little Mac Sandal. Acronym list and jewelry. Let me know somehow if you or Wichita PD received this. Also, let me know if you or PR received number 7 at Home Depot drop site.
Now in a parking lot, Magita lifts a cornflake box marked BTK bomb out of the bed of a pickup. He carefully pulls out a plastic bag. Words appear, Home Depot, 8 January 2005. As Baines looks on, Magita removes several pages from the bag. He hands her the rest. She reaches in and pulls out a gold pendant. She joins Magita in studying the tight pages.
You must be kidding. Can I communicate with Floppy and not be traced to a computer? Be honest.
Floppy disk?
He wants us to answer him a classified ad.
He can't be that stupid.
She places the bag back in the truck. Magita's face grows pensive. He looks up from the pages and scans the lot. As his partner checks the truck's cab, the detective glances at the Home Depot storefront. He turns his head and presses his lips tight. Above, on a nearby pole, he spots a security camera.
I hope you smile for the camera.
Now, at the police station, the security footage plays on a monitor. It shows someone placing the items in the back of the truck. An officer zooms in on the figure, but the face is unclear. Zooming out, the figure heads to an SUV.
Can't see the license plate.
That'd be too easy. What is that, a Jeep?
Cherokee, gotta be at least 2,000 or 3,000 of those in the city.
All right, let's start looking. Did we place the ad?
Just like he asked us to.
Magita wrinkles his brow.
Why would he trust us?
Excuse me, sir.
Magita, you got company.
Jason.
Magita leads Beatty away from the others.
I just wanted to run the story by the deadline's in about a half hour, and I just wasn't sure whether it was what you wanted. It's just a little off that piece.
We are not being hunted by BTK, but he is being hunted by all of us. Pretty good.
So you think it'll help?
I think it'll help the people, and we need to take control away from him. This will help remind us of that.
So you think it's okay?
I think it's very good. Okay. And I think it's going to drive him nuts.
Nighttime at the Raider house. Dennis reads the paper. While his wife sleeps on the couch, he shakes his head. Dennis glances at her, then focuses on the paper. Pushing up his glasses, he studies an article, then checks the byline. It reads, Robert Beatty, Wichita. Dennis frowns, slams the paper down on a coffee table, and gets up. As he walks briskly past his wife, she remains still with her eyes closed. Mrs. Raider lifts her head. She sits up and looks toward the door. Rising, she leaves a blanket behind and walks to a window in her robe. She presses her hands to the glass. As she opens the window, Dennis halts outside the shed.
Hey, what's going on? Are you okay?
Yeah. I'm fine.
honey.
I'm going to do a little work. You go to bed. I'll be there in a little. Okay?
Night.
At the police station.
He keeps coming right at us. We're going to get this son of a bitch.
Magida sets down more plastic bags.
Another Odie's this time, and we've got a chapter entitled Hits.
Baines unbags a blonde doll dangling on a noose made of string.
Josie Otero.
Now in his van, Dennis steers down a residential street. As he stares out the driver's side window, he squints his eyes. He checks the road ahead, then continues observing over his shoulder. Mary crouches on the lawn in front of her house, facing a brown puppy. She makes a kissy face at her new pet and massages its neck. Dennis drives past a white picket fence and focuses ahead. As he turns the steering wheel, the van curves around a block. Dennis stares at the shingled house. Sitting on the front steps, the blonde teenage girl reads a book. A blue knapsack rests by her feet. With an unchanging face, the stalker keeps driving and shifts his eyes forward. Nighttime. As lights go out in Cousin's diner, Sally walks through the establishment, turns off another light, and exits the front door. From across the street, we watch her lock up and head down the sidewalk. The young waitress folds her arms and heads past several darkened storefronts. Sally walks across the street to a black sedan. Diagonally behind her, Dennis's cold face reflects in his side view mirror. Now a bright blue sky hangs over the Raiders' green lawn. In his shed, Dennis works on a bulky old computer. His wife enters with a plate.
Made you some cookies.
Don't. Don't sneak up on me like that.
Sneak up? You're working too hard.
She pulls her coat tight and looks around.
Looks like a tornado blew through here. Now, one day, I should just come out here and start throwing out.
Please don't.
She looks at him.
I like it like this.
His wife eyes the screen.
Judge Bulletin looks good.
Yeah, I don't know why it's not printing.
Told you to buy it new. When you get used, you just never know.
Okay.
He ejects the diskette and grabs his keys.
Where are you going?
Church. I used our printer.
As they head out, Dennis tries a cookie.
You're great.
Thanks.
Delicious.
Thanks.
Oh, hold you, please.
Sure.
I got a lock up.
Dennis closes the shed door and attaches a padlock. Now in his Jeep, he turns onto a block and speeds down a narrow driveway. Parking, he hops out of the vehicle with a purple diskette in hand. He shuts the door and briskly walks to the front steps of the church. Dennis jogs up, opens one of the facade's bright wooden doors, and disappears inside. In the sanctuary, he heads down the aisle and looks around.
Reverend?
Dennis.
The pastor stands above.
What a nice surprise.
I was getting a flyer about the potluck ready to print, but something's wrong with my printer. Can I use the one in the office?
You know you don't even need to ask, Dennis.
Thank you, Reverend.
Dennis smiles. Now at KNBS, a worker hands Slovin a manila envelope.
Thank you.
He opens it. He pulls out a pendant, then removes the purple diskette. Reaching back in, Jerry finds several sheets of paper folded together. He reads the top sheet entitled Communication, then flips through the other pages. Another states the quote, sleek and nasty. It's a big, scary, suspenseful read, and I loved every minute of it. Now at the police station, Baines and Magida accompany a curly-haired man to a computer station.
Jump up a seat, General.
A seated officer gets up and the curly-haired man takes his place in front of the large monitor.
What can you tell us about where that's been?
The man inserts the purple diskette.
I can ID the software, find out where the program came from, then maybe we can pull the user.
How long will it take?
Shouldn't take me too long.
He highlights several lines of text and types on the keyboard. As Magida watches, Baines paces. The curly-haired man highlights more, scrolling through the text. With a knitted brow, he types, then checks the screen. His eyes scan additional data. He opens a word processing document, then calls up an option menu. A summary window pops open over the document. The curly-haired man examines its contents. It lists Dennis as the author and Christ Lutheran Church as the company.
Wow.
Well, what?
It was made by a guy named Dennis.
Any last name?
No. Here's the thing. The software comes from a church.
What?
Yeah. Christ Lutheran Church.
Megiddo takes out his notepad.
Let's go to church.
Now outside Dennis's church, Megiddo and Bane stare at the towering steeple.
Do you think?
No, soon enough.
Later.
There's only one Dennis with access to our computer, Dennis Rader, the president of our church council.
God.
Well, sure, whatever this is, officers, there must be some mistake. Dennis Rader is a good man.
Megiddo stares tight-lipped.
Dennis L. Rader, born March 9th, 1945. Graduated Heights High School, 63. He served in the Air Force between 66 and 70. In 74, he moved on to ADT Security and went to night school at WSU. He graduated in 79 with a degree in Administration of Justice.
Perfect.
In 1990, he took a job as a Park City Compliance Officer.
He's a dog catcher. Gents, gather around, please. Denny, you don't want to hear this.
The team surrounds Megiddo.
We got him, guys. We got the name. The name is Dennis L. Rader. He lives at...
He'd been hiding in plain sight right under our noses all this time. He'd been watching us for 30 years, so now we were going to watch him.
Now Dennis and his wife exit their home. He gives her a kiss.
He was like clockwork, down to the minute. We knew his route to and from work, mapped down to the inch.
Wearing his uniform, Dennis climbs into his van. On the street, cars sit parked along the curb.
He set up a special comm line, a frequency he couldn't get on his radio at work.
Dennis and his wife eat at Cousins.
We had warrants for his house, his office, the animal hospital, the church, and his mother's room.
At church, the Raiders greet the pastor.
We even got a subpoena to access his children's medical records for DNA. We were not going to let him get off on a technicality. We watched him. We isolated him. We had 215 officers all ready to jump.
Megiddo and Baines watch from a car parked across the street. Now our view pulls back from a cloudy sky. Photographs dissolve into each other, showing Raiders' victims. At the Otero crime scene, young Megiddo watches a gurney being wheeled away. A headline on an opinion page reads, "The BTK letter. Megiddo lies asleep." The subliminal message reads, "Now call the chief."
When the time was right.
Lying in bed, Megiddo answers the phone.
Yeah.
His wife stirs beside him.
Okay, thanks.
He lowers the phone to his side.
The daughter's DNA sample came back. It's a match. We got him.
Smiling serenely, Rachel holds his hand. Megiddo stares up toward the ceiling. As he wears a pensive frown, his wife hugs his arm. She kisses his hand. Now a photo on a nightstand shows the Raiders. A hand hits the snooze button on an alarm clock. Eyes closed, Dennis pulls back the covers and sits up on the edge of the bed. Morning light filters in through the curtains. Wearing blue pajamas, Dennis scratches the back of his head, then puts on his glasses. As his wife continues sleeping, he folds the covers back over his side of the bed. He lumbers across the room. In the Megiddo house, Becky reads a book as her parents hug.
Good luck.
She rubs her husband's back.
Work's out of the equation.
They blow each other kisses. Megiddo puts his arm around his daughter.
I love you.
Bye, Dad.
Now wearing his uniform, Dennis heads down his driveway.
Hey,
His wife comes outside.
Forget something?
She brings him his thermos and a sack lunch.
Raspberry jelly.
Thank you, darling. Mm-hmm. You're my best girl.
She heads back for the house. Now a broom sweeps leaves away from an outdoor staircase. It's the pastor. Wearing a heavy coat and scarf, he clears Christ Lutheran's front driveway. As the compliance van pulls up, he sets his broom aside. Dennis climbs out.
Morning.
Morning.
Dennis hands over a large pot and plastic wrapped dish.
Spaghetti sauce and salad for tonight's potluck.
Thought you couldn't make it.
Oh, I can't, but I signed up. I'd hate to leave you without any sauce, hmm? Thanks. Bye now.
As he heads back to his van, the pastor watches him go. Later, Dennis drives down a residential street. Stopping at an intersection, he looks around peacefully at green tree branches swaying in the sunlight. A red car sits parked outside a simple one-story red and white house. Dennis takes calm breaths. A police cruiser speeds up from behind him and an unmarked SUV skids to a stop in front of him. Several more vehicles descend upon the van from every direction. Dennis cracks a faint smile and puts up his hands as armed FBI agents swarm around him. Magida and Baines exit their sedan.
Don't move!
Uniformed officers stalk closer to the van, their guns trained on Dennis.
Don't move!
An agent aims a rifle. Guns drawn, Magida and Baines march past the riflemen. Magida opens the van's driver's side door.
Out of the car.
Out of the vehicle. On the ground.
Viewed from several different angles, Magida shoves Dennis onto his belly in the street.
Cuff him.
Agents and SWAT team members keep their rifles aimed as an officer cuffs the suspect's hands behind his back. Smirking, Dennis looks around at the large group. Magida holsters his gun. Lifted to his feet, Dennis stares at the detective.
Hello, Detective Makita.
Mr. Rader, do you know why you're being arrested?
I have suspicions why.
The other law enforcers stay alert as an officer removes the suspect's belt.
Give him the car.
The officer escorts Dennis past the others. The suspect eyes his captor's heavy, bulletproof garb.
Nicely done.
Dennis smiles at them as the officer escorts him past several cars. Magida strides through the different group's ranks.
Well done.
An FBI agent holsters his pistol. The officer brings Dennis past Magida and Bain's sedan to a police cruiser. Pushing the suspect's head down, he seats him in the back. Now Beatty stands by a brick wall at a press conference with the chief.
We knew we had to get to this day. We knew that we had to do everything in our power to bring about resolution and justice, and that's just what we set our sights on. It was about the law enforcement community coming together for one purpose and one purpose only, to identify and apprehend BTK. The bottom line is, we got him. BTK is arrested.
Magida wears a solemn expression. Now in the Rader home, Dennis's wife peers out a window overlooking the backyard. Covering her mouth, she watches police officers carry evidence from the shed. Her weary, sorrowful gaze turns briefly toward us. Now at the police department, Dennis sits across a table from Magida.
Do you know about the BTK investigation?
Yeah, I've been a BTK fan for years. Watching it.
Interrogation hour 0:01.
Do you know what will happen if your DNA sample comes back a match?
I guess that might be it, then.
Do you know anything about the murders?
There were four, well, whatever was in the paper, the Otero family in the paper. Four members were killed, man and wife, two kids. The way the paper dictated, it's pretty brutal. Pretty brutal.
Gripping a pencil by its eraser and tip, Magida twirls it with both hands. He stares at Dennis.
Should we get some coffee?
Magida nods to a uniformed officer standing at the door.
We traced the disc back to your church, Mr. Rader. It came from you.
Dennis gives Baines an icy stare.
The DNA came back positive.
As the suspect looks Magida in the eyes, the gray-haired detective stares back coldly. Dennis's chin quivers.
Well, no way I can weasel out of that or lie. Isn't any way you can get out of DNA, right?
He smiles at Magida, whose expression remains grim. Rocking slightly, Dennis hunches his shoulders. As Baines gives him a plain stare, he faces her.
Okay, then, I guess... Well, this will take a while. We can start with one and work the others.
Hour 1, minute 47.
I was a D-plus or C-minus type person in college. I'm not a very good speller. You probably already know that. In fact, my wife said to me the other day, she said, you spell just like BTK.
Now more words appear. Interrogation, hour 3, minute 31.
I'm a sadist. I knew as early as elementary school. I would... Yeah, I've killed animals, and I would get a cat or a dog, tie them up, strangle them. Although I'm a bad guy, I care for people, you know. I have concerns for people.
Hour 5, minute 2.
I never stood out. That, I suppose, that would be one of my gifts.
He drinks from a paper cup, then hands it to the officer.
Here you go.
Hour 5, minute 55.
Just put that in the refrigerator. Oh, put BTK on the lid there, so later on we'll know which one's mine.
Interrogation, hour 9, minute 49.
Why aren't there more? Well, it seemed like as I got older, I started making... Physically, I just wasn't up to it. I knew if I'd have to fight somebody, it'd have to be an older person, because I'd just be winded or wouldn't be able to fight physically. I don't know. Maybe I just started to mellow out a little bit.
Hour 10, minute 12.
I just recently threw away my backup weapon, .22. It's the one I use when I shot Bright. Shot Kevin Bright with it. He got out. And he's a big old guy. So I just quick, like you do in the Westerns, like John Wayne. I just, without hardly thinking, I just grabbed my backup, pointed it, and fired. Bang, bang.
Hour 13, minute 11.
That's just blowing smoke. That's all that was, really blowing smoke. I knew I could really stir the pot. You guys took it for a while. I told you to search deep, and you did. I bet you guys searched houses, and you guys took a line, sinker, and hook and all for a while.
Hour 17, minute 24.
My scrapbooks are slick ads.
You probably don't know about those yet.
You'll find them right here. What you call a cupboard.
He draws a diagram.
Where you put all your dry goods, okay? Bottom drawer. Take that out. There's a false bottom.
Slick ads are like treasures to me.
Hour 20, minute 0.
I had a compartmentalized situation where I was mostly. I would have my social contacts. That's what I would call my family, people in my church and at my work situation. And then I would have the business of... being under factor X, of being the serial killer.
Hour 21, minute 4.
I don't think it was actually the person I was after. I think it was the dream. You have to remember, you're talking to this really weird guy that has these dreams. I know it's not a...
Dennis shakes his head.
Very nice thing to say about a person, but they were basically just an object. They were just an object. That's all they were. I had more satisfaction building up to it and afterwards than I did actual killing the person.
Hour 23, minute 19.
Now, are they going to, am I going to in a special section of the jail, or am I going to be thrown in with a bunch of loonies?
Hour 24, minute 12.
There were different ways. Sometimes I used the rope, sometimes... I used stocking. Mostly I had my kit.
The picture goes blurry.
I think.
Later.
Basically what I was doing was phasing this stuff out, because I was shutting this stuff down in about a year.
Hour 28, minute 18.
If I got through it, once the story was done, I might do another hit. I might not do another hit. It's just, I tried. There's this one girl... Been working on for a while now.
Dennis nods pensively. Later, he leans on the desk.
I think that I was always in the trolling stage. But sometimes...
Hour 29, minute 31.
Maybe I didn't get back to the house. Maybe they didn't come home. For some reason, I didn't go. There are a lot of lucky people out there. Yeah, there would have been more probably if I would have succeeded. Yeah, you're almost guaranteed it. There are a lot of lucky people.
Opening his eyes wide, Dennis scowls and nods as our view edges closer. Now in the courtroom, Judge Waller sits on the bench.
Does any party desire any further matters to be put on the record at this time?
No, Your Honor.
All right. You may be seated, Mr. Rader.
The goateed defendant takes a seat. Back in the interrogation, Baines scribbles notes as Dennis sits with his hands cupped together on the table. The female detective rests her chin on her palm.
I just have one more question.
Okay.
Did you really think we were that stupid?
Interrogation, hour 29, minute 59.
You asked whether that disc could be traced.
How come you lied to me?
I was trying to catch you.
Dennis blinks thoughtfully, then rolls his head.
I thought we had a rapport going, Jason. I thought you'd want to know how the story ends.
The on-screen timer changes to hour 30, minute zero.
The thing I keep asking myself is this. How do you keep going?
Now people file out of the courtroom.
I mean, when you know there are people out there like that.
A bailiff handcuffs Dennis.
How do you kiss your kid goodbye and send her off to school? Maybe that's the lesson here. There's always going to be something out there we can't make sense of. Something that scares us so much we can't move.
The killer stares at Magida, who stands against a back wall.
But in the midst of that terror, there is no choice but to find the strength, the faith, to keep going.
Magida hugs his family.
To keep living. Otherwise, they win.
Fade to black. Words appear. Dennis Rader could not be sentenced to death because his crimes occurred before 1994, the year that capital punishment was reinstituted in the state of Kansas. Rader was sentenced to 10 consecutive life sentences. He will be eligible for parole February 26, 2180. He would be 235 years old. Credits: executive producers Robert M. Certner, Frank Von Zernick.